I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
More lawsuits, more trouble in college football. Amber and Ian is on ESPN Radio. You find him at Ian Fitz ESPN. You find me at Amber W Sports. So we are in the world of lawsuits. It's true.
I know, you got my attention.
The money is flying all over the place. And so there will be lawyers because that's the way that things work. That's the way that the world works, Ian. And the ACC now has multiple lawsuits swirling around. Florida State is suing the ACC. The ACC in that situation had actually preemptively sued FSU because they knew FSU was about to sue them and they wanted to get a jump start there. They sued them in North Carolina, which is where the ACC headquarters are located. And so in turn, that case so far, they've just been fighting over where it should take place. Obviously, Florida State wants it in Florida. The ACC wants it in North Carolina. So that's where we are right now with Florida State trying to get out of that grant of rights deal. Well, now enter Clemson. And maybe the fact that ACC didn't preemptively sue Clemson meant they didn't see this one coming. But Clemson has actually sued the ACC now, of course, in a very friendly court in South Carolina. So no doubt the ACC is about to start fighting with them about venue and trying to get that move to North Carolina. But the point here is, Ian, that you've got the two biggest powerhouses from a football perspective in the ACC suing the ACC. And why? Because they're trying to get out of that grant of rights deal that has them locked in to the TV deal on the table for the ACC until 2036. And it's a desperation move. They see the money, the dollars flying around everywhere else. They want part of it. And the only way they think they're going to get it is to get the heck out of the ACC.
Yeah, and they knew that $7.8 billion expansion in the college football playoff that ESPN, ABC, and Disney has just purchased. We'll touch on that in a moment. That's a lot of coin, and they're locked into their little area of, what are we getting per year? Oh, but what's the SEC making? Oh, a triple what we get. Oh, the Big Ten's making triple what we get. Coach, we want out. I mean, that's basically, I'm no lawyer, you are, but that's basically what they said is, man, we ain't getting enough, a big enough piece of this pie. We want to leave. So that we knew this was coming. This was just a matter of when it hit today. So Florida State started it. We knew that was going to happen. Clemson followed suit today, literally. We knew that was going to happen, just a matter of when it happened now. I turn it over to you, counselor, as to what the timeline and how long this might take to actually play out.
Well, lawsuits always take a very, very long time, no matter how viable they are. But this one has an uphill battle, Ian, because the reality is you can't just get out of a deal because you signed a bad deal. And it's hard to argue here that they did not voluntarily enter into this deal. And so that's the battle that they're going to be up against in trying to get out of this deal by suing the ACC. The argument on the other side, the ACC's argument is going to be, hey, you voluntarily entered into this thing. You approved our television rights deal. And importantly, you approved the fee if you were to withdraw from the ACC, which is a penalty of $140 million. And so the ACC's position is, you agreed to all this. You know, you're two of our biggest powerhouses. You agreed to this. You opted into this thing when you re-signed it in 2013 and again in 2016. And now in 2024, you want out of it. And the argument on the Florida State side and on the Clemson side is going to be, well, this is absolutely exorbitant. The $140 million penalty, this thing is far too long. None of it's fair. We're locked in. We don't have options, yada, yada, blah, blah, blah. It's not going to be an easy argument, frankly, for these schools to make. But I also think they're trying to get to a point where they're putting a lot of pressure here on the ACC, where now you know those schools want out. And what does this all look like when it's playing out in the court of public opinion? Ian, we already know that right now college football is a bit of a mess with all of the changes. And from a conference perspective, I don't think that this is helpful to the look overall for the ACC.
Yeah, because they may be there may be other institutions like North Carolina, like a Virginia, like a Virginia Tech. They may be also looking to join them and seek life elsewhere and join the future of what drives this train, and that's football. And again, we'll touch on that in about 60 seconds. But I want you to put a bow on this thing, Amber, because I don't have an answer to it. I'm not a lawyer. Again, you are. What kind of a case does Florida State and Clemson truly have against the ACC to try and get out of this thing sooner than later? When I say sooner, I'm talking like in the next 2 years when the big money starts to roll in for the college football playoff.
Well, and is there a way for them to work something out? Because normally your goal
is there?
When you sue is let's actually try to find a place where we're settling. And so we're settling somewhere less than $140 billion, which is the current penalty if they were to go ahead and just defect from the ACC. Obviously, exorbitant is, and that's the term used in this lawsuit. So they're trying to get that cheaper. Now, are they trying to get out of it completely, or do they think that they can drag this out and get to a point with litigation where maybe the ACC is willing to let them out of this thing for a bit cheaper? Of course, that's going to harm their grants of rights deals because certainly the TV networks thought they were paying for Florida State and Clemson. So what does that mean from an ACC perspective? It's murky. It's not easy. I don't think it's an easy argument, frankly, for Florida State to make and for Clemson to make. Because again, I think it's a pretty strong argument that you can say, hey, you voluntarily entered into this. You knew everything before you entered into this agreement. We didn't force you to enter into this. You approved all of this, including the $140 million penalty. You approved this. But on the other side, of course, there's always arguments to be made. And Florida State and Clemson are going to make as much noise as they can in making them to make things difficult enough to the ACC that maybe they let them out anyways at some point because it becomes too exorbitant to fight it all. And frankly, what does this all mean for all of us on the outside that are not involved in these lawsuits? It means that, once again, it feels like we're headed towards real super conferences here, Ian, where if those pieces to the puzzle start falling from the ACC, and you're talking the biggest pieces of the puzzle there from a football perspective, then what does it mean overall for any of these conferences? And if they were able to be successful here, which again, I don't know if it goes all the way there, because I mean, you're talking years and years if it does, but heck, they've got years. This thing goes until 2036, so it's worth it. If it takes 5 years in litigation to try to get out of this thing, you're still getting out of this thing way before your grant of rights deal is up, so it's worth it from those schools' perspectives, and that's why they're fighting this thing. But what does it mean overall? Again, I just think it means that we're headed towards a world of the super conference.
Oh, without a doubt. And that leads to the college football playoff, you know, and this deal that was just consummated and finalized today between the college football playoff and ESPN, ABC, Disney for $7.8 billion.
They can't break us off a piece of that. They've got 7.8 billy laying around here.
Just a couple
that's
foul.
That's ESPN.
Just a couple foul, right? I mean, come
I'm
on, for Amber and
much.
Ian. I mean, that's not a
been
ton.
Crushing it.
I mean, you know, a little kicker to James, you know, for our producer, Rachel, you know, our AP. I mean, let's go, man. Let's take care of the ball club. But this is a massive deal, and it was almost done last week. Didn't get done. Now it is. It goes through 31-32. And this goes to something that we've been talking about for a long time. And that is the college football playoff is bigger, more popular, more powerful than the NCAA could ever dream of being. Why? It is the most popular aspect out there. It is the biggest brand, the biggest sport in collegiate athletics. It's football. Football drives the train. We all know that. And because of the popularity and the obsession, forget passion about it. There is an obsession in college football with their fan bases. Hence, they will fork over money hand over foot. And football pays for men's tennis, men's soccer, women's tennis, women's soccer, all of it, every single bit of it. And the almighty media dollar is what drives it. And so the college football playoff is the most powerful entity right now in college athletics. And what's driving that train are two things, the SEC and the Big Ten. And that's the bottom line. And the SEC and the Big Ten right now are about to say, all right, who wants to join us? No, we don't want you. You're out. No, we don't want you. You just kind of slide on over there. It's like the guy or the girl at the end of the night in a college bar going, no. Ooh, hey, yeah, okay, you can come home. You can come over to the after party. You're good. Wait, no. No. Oh, yeah, you can come to the after party. That's what's going on with the SEC, the Big Ten right now.
Is that what you were doing in college, Ian Fitzsimmons?
No, I was tending bar, actually. I mean, I didn't get to go to the after party. I had to clean up the bar while everybody went to the after party. Where was the old train station or the Purple Fish? And anybody who was in Tuscaloosa, Alabama, back in the day, if you heard the two words Purple Fish, you probably just had a little, oh, my gosh, because that joint was a little rough. But anyway, point is, they're going to invite whomever they want, and I think they're going to pick and choose from the ACC and anyone else, hence the lawsuits with Florida State and Clemson. Word is that UNC is being courted by the SEC. Word is Virginia and Virginia Tech have been courted also by the SEC. So, look, this thing is far from over as far as musical chairs and conference realignment, but the bottom line is with this college football playoff deal getting done for that kind of money, the SEC and the Big Ten are driving this train, and they're going to, whomever they choose to allow to get on it, sorry to hear about it, but that's just a fact of life. They are picking and choosing, bottom line.
And again, I think that this is going to be an uphill battle here for Clemson and Florida State, legally speaking. But what this does show emphatically, unequivocally, is the ACC has fallen very squarely behind the SEC and the Big Ten. Everybody has. And like you just said, the SEC, the Big Ten, they're running things. They're running the college football playoffs. And in essence, they are running the entire sport then because of that $7.8 billion deal that they just inked with us. Again, just... throw me another five on it, ESPN. Seems like you're good for it. Amber and Ian is presented by Progressive Insurance. Save when you bundle motorcycle, RV, and boat insurance. Visit progressive.com. Coming up next here on Amber and Ian, the Bears eliminated any doubts about what they're going to do with the number one overall pick over the weekend. We'll get into that. ESPN Radio is also available on the ESPN app.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
2022 Heisman Trophy winner, Caleb Williams, 7-5.
There's only one guy that can throw the ball like him, Mahomes.
How did Caleb Williams do that?
Unbelievable. He's awesome. He's really, really special.
The Magic Man pulls out the Magic Wand.
Well, we know what the Bears are going to do now. We don't have to have the Justin Fields number one pick conversation any longer. It seems... pretty clear they're drafting a quarterback in this draft. We're going to get to the Bears in just a moment. Amber and Ian presented by Progressive Insurance. But first, it is first four night in the men's bracket. Tomorrow is the first four in the women's tournament. But right now in the men's, Wagner and Howard are going at it. Wagner leading the way 29-17. We got Colorado State and Virginia tipping off at 9:10 p.m. Eastern. So we will keep you updated on those games throughout Amber and Ian tonight. You can find him at Ian Fitz, ESPN. You can find me as well at Amber W Sports. So we know what the Chicago Bears are doing, Ian. Think goodness we know what they are doing. I thought they
were
terrified. Drag this thing
you
out.
Were terrified that it's going to go on for another 5 weeks till draft night.
Well, no, more than that, because frankly, it should have. If they wanted the best value for Justin Fields, they should have held on to him until the beginning of the season, until somebody's quarterback went down and people got desperate and were willing to trade something better than a sixth rounder for Justin Fields. They could have dragged this thing all the way through training camp into a regular season. I know there's this whole idea you can't bring Caleb Williams in there with Justin Fields there. I mean, why not? Everyone makes such a big deal out of that. They could have dragged this thing out and we would have been talking about, even after they drafted in the draft, we would have been talking about, what are they going to do with Justin Fields? What are they going to do? Who's starting game one? Blah, blah, blah. And I am so tired of the Justin Fields number one pick conversation. I'm just glad that we have some sort of resolution to it.
Rachel, Mark that. Lift it, please. That's another Amber voice, you know, right there. Let's put our montage together. And you know, about at the end of every week, if we could, a new show idea. At the end, final segment on a Friday, we just take Amber's greatest hits and just compile about 60 seconds of that, because that is absolutely fantastic. I would try and just try and imitate you, but I wouldn't do it justice. But bottom line is, you are correct, right? So now you have Caleb Williams going to the Chicago Bears. And
well,
I don't
think it could theoretically be Caleb Williams. They could trade back. Maybe Drake May is their guy, and they want to trade back a few spots.
No. I can damn near guarantee that it's going to be Caleb Williams to Chicago. And he has already stated, look, he wants to be the number one overall pick. And he loves Chicago. And he's been actually studying up on Bears history. I mean, the dude is ultra competitive and wants to win more with the guy next to him than the man in the mirror. I've had the privilege of being on the call of six of his games the last 2 years. And this dude's just an absolute warrior and a sponge of a football player. So you're going to start hearing a lot of the, you know, hey, you know, Caleb Williams has this flaw. This is Lions season, right? And you're going to hear a lot of that noise on a lot of high draft picks. But Caleb, to me, he's got every single tool in the toolbox that you need. And the biggest asset he's got to me, Amber, is not being talked enough, and that is Keenan Allen coming over from the L.A. Chargers. This dude is a absolute monster. Five straight 1,000-yard seasons. Had arguably one of his best years at the age of 31. He's getting better like fine wine, man, year by year. And he's got a lot of ball left in those legs, at least 2-3 years left. Man, that's a lot for a 31-year-old wide receiver who had another 1,000-yard receiving year again last season. So, and he can be one of those dudes that goes, hey, Caleb, this is what I saw here. You're going in starting in training camp. You know, if I give you this little – I mean, he is going to be remarkable for Caleb Williams. So, to me, it's stone cold, lead pipe, lock, mark it down. Caleb's going to Chicago, and his biggest asset is not even one of the coaches. To me, it's Keenan Allen, a guy who has seen every coverage that you can throw at a quarterback.
Well, his coach might be on the hot seat, so it's certainly not Eberflus or any of the coaches at this point. Allen is a 6-time Pro Bowler, 5 seasons with over 100 catches, 6 years with over 1,000 receiving yards. I mean, it feels like a cheat code when you have him and DJ Moore. Certainly Caleb Williams or whomever is going to have weapons, but I tend to agree with you. It's going to end up being Caleb Williams. And the reason for that isn't even necessarily that I believe Ryan Poles and Eberflus and everybody there in Bears brass has evaluated Caleb Williams as the best. Frankly, it almost doesn't matter. It's so risky, I feel like, to draft anybody other than him, because the overall consensus, the overwhelming consensus, is Caleb Williams nationally. So I feel like the one place you go then is drafting Caleb Williams, because if it doesn't work out, or even if it takes a little while, I mean, if it doesn't work out, everybody's eventually gone either way. But if it takes a little while, I feel like your fan base is going to be more patient with you because you didn't reach for the pick. You picked the guy that everybody is saying that you should pick. So if he comes out in year one and sucks, we're all going to be pretty patient for year two, right? Because nobody wants to be wrong in evaluating this draft thing. It's kind of like what happened with Trevor Lawrence a little bit. Like, everybody's been patient with the Trevor Lawrence experience. It's, oh, well, it was Urban Meyer and then adjusting to a new system, and there's injuries, and it's like a lot of kind of excuses that the fact that he hasn't actually become an elite quarterback yet when he was supposed to be generational. And one of the reasons for that is because everybody was so darn sure about Trevor Lawrence coming out of college that they're going to be more patient than you otherwise would be if you felt like it was a reach.
Yeah, and you know, a lot of people are wondering also, with the Commanders having the second overall pick, he's from there. His only flaw, in my opinion, is he went to Gonzaga High School, because Gonzaga stinks. I can't stand the Purple Eagles, right? They were our rival, right, in high school. I got shipped off to boarding school when I was 14. I was a bad kid, and I deserved it, right? But that's his only flaw.
You are the only kid from the South that I know that went to boarding school. I think of boarding schools as such a Northeastern thing. Like, everybody in the North, boarding school is just like normal in the Northeast, which seems so weird and foreign to me, by the way, as a girl who grew up in Florida. I didn't know anybody from the South that went to a boarding school.
I didn't either. I pulled up to Georgetown Preparatory School, Georgetown University's high school, wearing cowboy boots, jeans, and a white T-shirt.
Was it in Louisiana? Where is that? Well, not Georgetown Prep wouldn't be, right?
Yeah, it's in Rockville, Maryland, right outside D.C. No, I mean, so I got shipped like the real off deal. To boarding
you're at the real
school.
Deal.
Oh, yeah. I mean, gone. Like, see you, buddy. We got no hope for you. We're sending you to the Jesuits. I mean, gone.
Like a guy who grew up on a horse farm in Louisiana. Welcome
going to
D.C.
That was not exactly peaches and cream. That was oil and vinegar for about 2 years there, and then we finally figured it out. But anyway, look, and Cliff Kingsbury coming in was the senior analyst at USC, loves Caleb Williams. Caleb Williams, you know, absolutely loves Cliff Kingsbury. His offense would be perfect for him. It's not that simple, right? I mean, Caleb could try and force his way to try and go home and reunite with Kingsbury, but I don't think that's his makeup, man. I don't think Caleb is built that way.
Take a listen to this, because RG3, ESPN's NFL analyst, said that he should do that exact thing on RG3's podcast. Take a listen.
Caleb Williams should pull a Eli Manning and demand that the Chicago Bears do not draft him number one overall. After everything that's happened with just Justin Fields, can Caleb Williams really look at that and say, you know what? This is the organization that has my best interests at heart, and they're going to help develop me into the player that I want to become. After the Bears took Justin Fields and turned him into a sixth round pick, can Caleb Williams really look at that and say, you know what? Yeah, this organization is going to help get me where I want to go. I thought Ryan Poles was having an amazing offseason up until this trade for Justin Fields, because you trade Justin Fields so you can get some players back to help your team out this year. Because Ryan Poles and Matt Eberflus, they're in a lame duck season. They have to win this year or they're going to get fired. He does have power right now, and he should exercise it if he feels like Chicago is not where he should be.
I don't know. Sam Howell's not exactly the next Tom Brady. Like, why do we have more confidence in the Commanders? If you're at the top of the draft, if you're picking at the top of the draft, you're not going to be a good organization. That's the reality of it. If you're the number one, number two, number three overall pick, you probably ain't going to a great organization. But organizations become great when the winning starts. And if you're great enough, then presumably the winning should start. Coming up next here on Amber and Ian, we are going to continue with all things NFL, maybe get some help on the betting side as well.
Now, let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom! Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good! The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
There are no tears when it comes to Mel Kiper's mock drafts. We are in Mel Kiper mock draft season. We are on, is this 3.0 that he just released?
Correct.
Today? I'm starting to lose track. Okay, 3.0. All right, we are in the third round of Mel Kiper's mocks, and we got another butte in front of us to get to.
Why are Bonnie Tyler? Really?
Damn. It's because it's your favorite song, Ian. I was trying to get you to, like, liven up the party here with a little karaoke action.
The last time you played this was about 6 months ago, and I think I started singing. That's where you're trying to draw me off sides, not have.
Well,
all right,
got
back
in
to
your
Amber.
Head the rest of the
night, of the show, and it was
then
nonstop.
Rachel kept playing it. Just
then
sure.
I started going out and singing it with my kids, and then they were hating me. Yeah, it was a rough time. There we go.
So here she's back. Rachel's back. I try to do it to you once again.
I'm always here for you guys. I'm always here.
At Ian Fitz ESPN is where you want to find the Bonnie Tyler? Bonnie Taylor? What's her name? Bonnie Tyler?
Tyler. Tyler,
the Bonnie Tyler fan at Ian Fitz ESPN. Oh, yeah. At Amber W Sports is where you find me. All right, so let's talk about Mel's latest, because we know now the difference between 2.0 and 3.0. So we know that the Chicago Bears have traded away Justin Fields, right? So clearly they're going to keep the number one overall pick, or at least seemingly so. They could still trade back if they wanted a Drake May or a Jaden Daniels instead. Neither me nor Ian expect that to happen. Neither does Mel. He has Caleb Williams going to Chicago via the Panthers with the number one overall pick. So let's talk about after number one, Washington, Jaden Daniels. Is that starting to feel like a lock? He's got Washington, Jaden Daniels, New England, Drake May. And those two names I keep seeing toggled back and forth throughout people's mocks.
Yeah, and it's all in the eye of the beholder with those two guys. Like Drake May, did his stats dip a little bit? Well, so did Caleb Williams. It's because they both lost guys from their previous seasons. I mean, Drake May lost an offensive coordinator. Caleb Williams lost a couple of offensive linemen and Jordan Addison to the Minnesota Vikings. So it's not like they had the continuity that they'll have for the most part in the National Football League. At least you hope to have continuity, right, for more than a year like these two guys had going back to their previous years at UNC and at USC, respectively, for May and Williams. But, you know, some people love Drake May. Some people like Jaden Daniels. But they both have some flaws. I mean, there were times where Drake May made just blatant mistakes and just missed reads. Jaden Daniels takes too many damn hits. You can't go toe-to-toe with an all-ACC linebacker named Tatum Bethune if you're Jaden Daniels and try and gain an extra 6 inches. He got snapped in half.
And that really won't work in the league.
No. I mean, and he's not a big dude. I mean, I wouldn't call him frail, right? But he needs to eat a couple of cheeseburgers. I mean,
he needed a little
more boudin, right, when he was down there in the swamps. I mean, it didn't fatten him up enough, right? But you talk about a different player from when we saw him at LSU week one against Florida State to the end of his career. I mean, his completion percentage skyrocketed. I mean, he was in numbers and breaking records that Joe Burrow set. I mean, that's the kind of season he had. That's why he hoisted the Heisman Trophy. I mean, it was a remarkable run, but his biggest mistake is he's got to learn to get down. Drake May has to be a bit more consistent. So, to me, it's all in the eye of the beholder when it comes to Washington, whether they want Drake May or Jaden Daniels. But I think Daniels, Amber, his game is more suited to what Cliff Kingsbury's offense wants to do than Drake May. And Drake May's a hell of an athlete, but Daniels, he's just different.
Are you more of a Drake May personally? Because I know you're saying the connection there with Kingsbury, it's fitting that system, you believe Jaden Daniels. But if you were the general manager of a team, are you going Drake May or are you going Jaden Daniels? You've been watching these guys incredibly closely all season.
I never saw Drake May in person. I've only seen him on tape. I've seen Jaden Daniels 5 times in person. Just watching him also behind the bench, that's why I love working sidelines for us, Amber. I mean, and you've worked a couple games with me. The conversations you hear behind the bench and the way players gravitate to certain guys, that's when you learn, you know, as far as character. You talk to, like when you and I did the Florida game, right? I mean, we're talking to strength and conditioning guys and assistant coaches like Jabbar Jaluk at Florida, you know. I mean, and the running backs coach. You get remarkable intel from those dudes about the person, not just the player. And so I can't talk about the person, Drake May, as much as other guys can. But Jaden Daniels is about as solid as they come. He just has to learn to get out of bounds and get down. And the best tape to watch is the guy that Kingsbury had in college for 2 years, and that would be Patrick Mahomes.
Right. Mel Kiper, ESPN's NFL draft expert, was on Unsportsmanlike, and he loves Jaden Daniels. So they asked him why he's so high on Jaden Daniels. Here's Mel.
He can throw it. He can throw it accurately. He can throw it anywhere on the field. He can run it. Nick Saban and that defensive talent at Alabama and the defensive guru that Nick is couldn't stop Jaden Daniels over the last 2 years. So for Jaden, he nailed the process. He did everything right. He's got his weight up a little bit. He's always going to be thin and the splendid splinter. But the bottom line is, for Washington, with the talent level improving and the NFC, where they're not as loaded with great quarterbacks as the AFC is, I think this is a perfect fit.
So he's gotten Jaden as the second quarterback off the board. Drake is the third quarterback going to New England. Then by the fourth pick, of course, we deviate away from quarterbacks. Marvin Harrison Jr. getting drafted by Arizona. The LA Chargers taking Malik Nabers. The New York Giants, he has them taking Roman Duzé. But what's interesting here that I want you to hear, Ian, is that Mel Kiper, when he was on Sportsmanlike, he said, don't sleep, though, on the Giants looking for a QB in this draft. Here's Mel.
I think the Giants would be the one. No, they're talking about it, but I didn't give them one. And I understand the Daniel Jones and the injuries, and Tim Hasselbeck when Jettup was talking about that. We all understand the injuries to Daniel Jones and the fact that he did take a step back, not because of anything he did, because the team wasn't very good and he got hurt. So, again, 2 years ago, he beat Kirk Cousins, or everybody celebrating going to the Atlanta Falcons. I struggled with the Giants because I heard McCarthy. He's red hot. The Giants. But will he be there? I don't even know if he'll be there. Maybe somebody jumps up and gets him ahead of the Giants and they take Odunze or Nabers, the receiver, to help Daniel Jones.
Man, I'm conflicted about that because typically I think that quarterback position is so important to hit on that I'm typically an advocate of draft a quarterback every single year until you're sure, until you are absolutely sure that you hit and that the dude you have under center, barring injury, is going to be under center for you for the next, you know, 5 years at least, right? And with the Giants, you can't feel so sure about Daniel Jones at this point. But at the same time, how can you be sure? You've already paid that guy. How can you be sure if you don't put weapons around him? So I'm a little conflicted there, right? And protection, because we did see the problem. I mean, there's a reason that they did pay Daniel Jones coming off of the good season, the season before last. You've got to put him in a position to continue to succeed at the same time.
Yeah, and there's a certain right tackle of Alabama, first name Evan, right? I can't believe it, that he has not hit for the New York Giants at right tackle. I mean, they've tried. I mean, give the Giants credit. They have just tried, and I thought that was a home run pick a couple years ago, and it hadn't worked out. I mean, it just hasn't. So, and hopefully he gets it right because he's a great person, and in college he was about as dominant of a tackle as you were going to find. So they have tried to protect him and improve that offensive line. It just hasn't happened yet. So the Giants, to me, are one of the key cogs in this draft because they could take a quarterback, they could trade back, they could take a Odunze, they could take whomever is he, you know, is it Alt from Notre Dame? I mean, or is it J.C. Latham? I mean, you know, from Alabama? Whomever their highest-rated offensive lineman is, they have options because they stink and they need help all over the damn field. But what you just mentioned about taking a quarterback damn near every year until you find it, you know who used to do that?
Who?
Ron Wolf, the Hall of Fame general manager for the Green Bay Packers. Even when he had a quarterback named Brett Favre, even well before Aaron Rodgers, right, he would take Mark Brunell. Go get in, and then all of a sudden, oh, you know what? We're going to ship him off to the Jags. We took a whatever fourth-round pick on him. I'm making that up. I don't remember exactly what it was. And we're going to ship him off for a higher value and extra picks. Oh, you know what? The following year, we're going to take Aaron Brooks out of UVA in the sixth round, right?
Right. I'm not talking first-rounders. I'm not talking every first-round quarterback, but take one in every damn draft,
He'd showcase him. I mean, he'd get him out there, right, and mop up duty or in preseason. Like, look what we got over here. Anybody need a quarterback? And what the Saints do? Here's a second and a fourth for him. All right, now you got more commodities. And then, oh, Matt Flynn out of LSU. Hey, we're going to showcase him. Seattle, what do you want? And they fleeced Seattle, where a guy named Russell Wilson comes in as a rookie, and Matt Flynn never started a game in Seattle. So to your point, Ron Wolf would do that damn near every other year, develop a quarterback, and then ship him off for more commodities and higher commodities, I mean, and more picks. And that's why the Packers were the Packers for as long as Ron Wolf was there contending for Lombardi's damn near every single year. So,
and then the way that the Packers have had the ultimate success, obviously, is having the Aaron Rodgers sit behind Brett Favre and having the Jordan Love sit behind Aaron Rodgers for years. And we've seen all of the most elite quarterbacks in the NFL right now. I mean, including Patrick Mahomes, they sat, right, for the most part. I mean, I guess maybe the C.J. Stroud is going to throw off this argument, the C.J. Strouds of the world. But most of these
guys, he's an anomaly. That doesn't happen very often,
and
right?
We'll see. Yeah. He's got to keep it up for him to actually be part of this elite quarterback conversation, right? But most of these guys who are in the elite tier of quarterbacks or even the top tier of quarterbacks in the league, they had an opportunity to sit. So if you're the Giants and you take a quarterback, what's the worst that happens then? He sits behind Daniel Jones because you paid Jones. You're going to start Jones. I'm not suggesting that you bring in a real quarterback controversy from that perspective. but you have them sit. And then what? You have them develop? When you have a quarterback right now at the helm who has durability concerns there with Daniel Jones, nevertheless, some accuracy concerns as well. So it's really interesting what the New York Giants could do. Minnesota, most people are tagging as the most interesting team, frankly, in this draft. He has them staying at 11th, taking J.J. McCarthy. A lot of people wonder if Minnesota is going to try to trade up into the top three. The problem is the top three need quarterbacks, Ian. So are they going to be willing to trade out of a top three spot in order to give Minnesota that opportunity, or is Minnesota going to settle on like a J.J. McCarthy?
If they like J.J. McCarthy, you move up because they already made the trade. They have two first-round picks right now. So
right. So
now you could package those, move up if the Giants don't have a true love for a J.J. McCarthy. And, if they want to move back, whatever it may be, Minnesota now has, and I agree with you, a bigger chip in this game, to say the least. And then they could move up because now they have more of an arsenal to be able to do so. And then think about Denver with Bo Nix. Mm-hmm. Mel Kiper has Bo Nix now going 12th overall to Sean Payton and the Donkeys of Denver. Mel Kiper has a remarkable comparison when it comes to Bo Nix and a former Sean Payton quarterback. Listen to this.
The one thing you have to look at with Drew Brees and Bo Nix, I ticked off the people in the league. Well, Bo Nix doesn't have the big-time arm. Well, did Drew Brees have the big-time arm? He was the first pick in the second round for that reason. Arm strength can get a little better once you're in the league. History has proven that with a lot of quarterbacks. So the arm strength issue with Drew Brees wasn't a factor. With Bo Nix, I don't think Sean Payton will look at that as a factor as well.
And he also went on, Drew Brees, 6 feet and a half. Bo Nix, 6'2". Completion percentage coming out of college, damn near identical. I mean, rushing yards, damn near identical. I mean, we're going, my cousin Vinny, identical. Right? So could that be a perfect guy to run Sean Payton's offense? Might be. It's very interesting that all of a sudden Kiper's got Nix going to Denver with Sean Payton.
He did pretty well with that Brees guy. It's got to be annoying for Drew Brees to be the example that we use for the short quarterback, right?
he's past that now because guys are shorter than he is, or short in stature. Kyler Murrays of the world, right?
Yeah, but whenever we draft any of those guys into the league, we're always like, but Drew Brees did it. It used to be Russell Wilson and
Good
Drew
point.
Brees, but I feel
Good
like
point.
Drew Brees is like that guy that
Good
we
point.
That we hold up as like, see, you can win if you're short. Coming up next here on Amber and Ian, how important is it for the NBA to find the next face of the league? We'll talk about that here on ESPN Radio.
Bet till your hands bleed.
We're stepping out on this one, but I feel pretty good about it. Our record, going back to the start of college football season, 62-31-2 against the number. We're very picky here on Amber and Ian. Give us Colorado State -2.5 on ESPN Bet. Buy it down to 2. A ton of the wagers are coming in on Virginia. They're the bigger brand. More of the money on Colorado State side, and Colorado is more balanced offensively and defensively. Virginia's a great defensive team. Offensively, one of the worst. As a matter of fact, I think they rank 146 in offense in D1 basketball. Bet to your hands bleed. Take the Rams of Colorado State, and when the first four in coming up in about an hour and a half. Bet to your hands bleed. Lay the 2.5. Buy it to 2.
Nikhil reached in on Keyonte George and turned him over. It's another Keyonte George turnover. And goes up for the dunk, and Thunder slams it in traffic over John Collins. And Ant may have hurt his left hand. He comes right to the bench. That was sick. He took off, launching himself to the iron. What a slam by Anthony Edwards.
That dunk was so nasty that it left both players injured. Anthony Edwards, you just heard there, he dislocated his finger making that dunk, by the way. John Collins also got hurt on that dunk. I mean, it couldn't go back into the game. Both of those guys get hurt because that dunk was that monstrous. That sound courtesy of KFAN. This Anthony Edwards is taking over this league. And boy, does he need to, Ian, because we still hear at ESPN spend, and it's not just an ESPN thing. I mean, it's true across all the networks. Like, we spend so much time still talking about the Lakers and the Warriors. And the Lakers and the Warriors are hanging on by a thread. I mean, neither of those teams are winning an NBA title this season. And why do we spend so much time on them? Because, frankly, LeBron James and Steph Curry and Kevin Durant, like, those guys are still the faces of the NBA. And I think that's a problem for the NBA, not to diminish the unbelievable greatness that we have witnessed from those guys and are still witnessing, which is remarkable to see, particularly from LeBron in 39 years old. Nevertheless, we've got to move forward. We've been watching LeBron for 20 years, and I'm not trying to push LeBron out of the league. Do not get me wrong, okay? We are witnessing that greatness still in real time, but we've got to have a next generation to look forward to. And that generation so far has been, you know, the Jokic's of the world. And Jokic is an unbelievable player. He's the best player in the NBA right now. And I don't know if he's the best ambassador for the NBA right now. I think Anthony Edwards seems like he might be that guy, though. That's the problem. That's the problem. I don't know if Jokic likes basketball.
Hold on a minute. He loves basketball. He wants to win to the point where he would rip your heart out with a spoon if he had to. But he don't like talking about himself and basketball. If you ask him about his horses, right? His number three horse in Serbia, or the two horse he has at Keeneland, right? I mean, it's like, you know, the jockey screwed me. I mean, whatever. I mean, he will talk your ass off about his horses. You ask him about his game the night before where he had 48, 14, and 10. He's like, oh, you know, we played okay.
Like just another night for Jokic.
Yeah, we played all right. You know, and we won by 30. I mean, come on. But, you know, that jockey in the race three, I mean, that's Jokic. But to your point about, you know, Ant-Man, Anthony Edwards, you know, every time I watch him do things like this, or the block he had last week, right?
Mm-hmm.
I
mean, he hits his head on the rim.
Yes. I mean,
he's not even that tall, by the way, Anthony Edwards. Like, what's so ridiculous about him.
You know what I keep thinking of is how the hell did Georgia not at least get to the tournament when you had Anthony Edwards? You need one great and a good in college basketball, right? And then everybody else. And you can make a run. I mean, some kind of a run. They didn't do a damn thing.
Anthony Edwards is 6'4". He's listed at 6'4". In basketball terms, that's like 5'5", to like the rest of us, right, in the world. 6'4", ain't much. And that vert is so unbelievable. And that makes it so much more fun to watch.
And he wants to play every night. He wants to play 82 of 82, Amber. And here's the thing.
Right. Like Michael Jordan used to, like, just fly through the air.
So many people are talking about who's the next face, right? As you mentioned, you know, LeBron is that moment of the delay. I don't know if you saw it with Golden State and the Lakers the other night, where to play the last 147 of the game, where Golden State was up 7, the game's, you know, practically over, but the shot clock kept going out, and it took them 21 minutes to play a buck 47.
Embarrassing for the league.
And LeBron James is at the scorer's table when he says, I'm too old for this bleep. Mm-hmm. that's what you're talking about, right? Like, hey, look, he's almost done, right? Steph has still got a lot of game in, but, you know, he's 35. But let's not force the new face of the league. It has to happen organically. The NBA tried to do this with, you know, remember Harold Miner calling him Baby Jordan, trying to market this next guy? No, it just has to happen.
But the NBA did have a real problem after Michael Jordan. I mean, there was a Michael Jordan dip after Michael Jordan left the game.
Yeah, no doubt.
And they've got to try to avoid that here.
But it has to happen organically. LeBron was already this massive, you know, marketing machine coming out of high school. That just happened, right? I mean, they got gifted with that. And then Steph Curry comes in, this skinny kid out of Davidson, and, you know, I mean, goes, what, eighth overall, and seven of the teams are going, damn, we really screwed up. Size really does
matter. And changes how the game's played.
Yes, he has, literally. It happened organically. Anthony Edwards is happening right now organically, and he could be the next face of the league. But you know what? Don't force it. Just let him continue to do what he's doing right now, like that block last week or that monster dunk. And, oh, by the way, his team is really damn good.
Really good. I don't know if it matters that it's in Minnesota. I don't really buy into that so much. LeBron was in Cleveland for years. I feel like the world's different than it once was. I don't know if you need to be in a major market. You just need to be a major star. And you need to embrace the moment. You need to be a superstar. You need to bring the fun to the game. And I think Anthony Edwards has the promise of doing that. Coming up next year on Amber Amber and Ian. We're going to try to bring the fun to the game as well. We're just over a day away from March Madness officially starting.